So it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this afternoon, Rod Garcia from Huntington Beach. Let's give him a warm welcome.
Good evening. Good evening, my brothers and sisters out here in Santa Maria. Thank you. I'm glad that sobriety is working well out here in Santa Maria. It's working good in Huntington Beach, too. I go to the Hal Hall in Huntington Beach, which is off of Garfield and Beach, and they have the early bird meeting, which starts at 6 in the morning. Now, those are true dedicated AAs. These people want to get sober no matter what. And we have people ranging into the 30s and the 40s as far as sobriety is concerned. I'm glad I'm here with all my friends. I'm glad that I'm here with you guys. Thank you for treating us so nice. This whole thing started with Pete Phillips and I. And then I met Sarah and I met Victoria. And we went from there. And lo and behold, here I am. I got sober on August 28, 1987. And if you're calculating that in your head, that's 28 years. So I'm very, very grateful. I was pronounced dead twice prior to becoming Alcoholics Anonymous, once in an automobile accident and once in a overdose. But the paddles brought me back to life, so there was a reason why I was here. There's a reason why I'm speaking here tonight. I should have been dead long ago. I was talking to Jessica, am I correct? Jessica and Sylvia prior to the meeting tonight. And I found out if you wanted to just kick back and wait for the band to play and wait for everybody to come over and pat you on the back and welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're probably going to be pretty lonely in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's not how it works. You have to have that psychic change, and the only way that the psychic change can happen is if you get involved in the steps. If you start digesting chunks of truth about yourself. If you don't want to do that, you're probably not going to be here for the long haul. So that's just my little soapbox that I wanted to get on for a brief moment before I get into my story. I come from a large family. My father was Mexican and my mother was Irish, so the DNA set in real quick. When it came to drinking, I knew how to drink. Just as I always overshot the mark. I always wanted to get to oblivion, and I overshot the mark. And usually I wound up in handcuffs, in jail once again, and I would think to myself, look at all these guys, man, that have been in jail, and I saw them the last time, and then I was thinking to myself, wait a minute, Rod, you're in jail right now, too. I was in jail, and I was hanging out with these people, and I was realizing that wasn't the place that I wanted to be at. I learned at a very, very early age how to play drums. I used to tap on things at home, pots and pans on the kitchen table, whatever it was. And my mother got me a guitar, and she got my brother a set of drums. And when my brother would go out on his paper route, I would go hop onto his drums. And they said, maybe we should switch those two instruments around. And so I started playing drums, and music can be very difficult. And sometimes people struggle with music. It didn't come difficult for myself. It was almost like a fish in water. You know, I just started playing, and they go, wow, he's got some potential. And I just started honing in on my skills by practicing. And practice makes perfect. I realized that. And a lot of people that were in my neighborhood weren't practicing. They were hoping that, you know, one day, the big manager would be over there to sign him a contract. Right at that time is when Eddie and Alex Van Halen came into the scene. And my brother and I wanted to be the new Alex and Eddie Van Halen. But my brother didn't practice, and I would practice, and he'd say, hey, we're going out tonight. You want to go out with us? And I go, no, I'm going to sit here and practice these drums. And they'd come back 5 hours later and I'd still be in the same position practicing those drums. They'd go, "Oh, you have a one in a million chance to ever hit it big in the music business." And I go, "All I need is one chance. That's all I need. When that brass ring comes around, I'm grabbing it. I'm grabbing it." And I did grab it and was very successful. I don't know why some people come in Alcoholics Anonymous and they're not successful, or they say the program doesn't work, or those old timers they're full of it. And, you know, I don't know what it is. There's some kind of a wall. But I don't know about you, but I do know about myself. I was desperate enough when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous to say, "I am willing to do whatever you tell me to do. If you want me to stand on my head and spit quarters out of my mouth, I'm going to do it. If that's what it takes for me to stay sober," because I didn't want that life anymore. It wasn't only the alcohol that I was involved in. It was all the other things that become of alcohol. And I like to see colors. I don't know if anybody here likes to see colors, but I like to see colors. And yeah, all right. I feel you, brother. I feel you. I did like to see colors, and it led me to drink even more. I never was into beer and wine. No offense to the beer and wine drinkers in the house, but I was into hard alcohol. I wanted to get to oblivion as quick as I possibly could. And I was a big fan of AC/DC. And Bon Scott died when he was 33 years old. And he died of cirrhosis of the liver. And, you know, I was thinking about Bon, and I used to listen. This is way back in the day. This is when they had cassette tapes. They didn't even have CDs at that time. They had cassette tapes. And I used to listen to this song. It was called Rock and Roll Damnation. I don't know if you've ever heard that song before. But there was a song called Rock and Roll Damnation. And there was one word that Bon Scott said in that song. He said, "Take a chance while you still got the choice." And when he said that, something clicked in me. I was reading a book called Up and Down with the Rolling Stones. It was written by Tony Sanchez, which was Keith Richards' drug dealer at the time. And he was talking about how he had gone from this crazy life and had gotten sober and moved on. So I was reading a book in the process and hearing this AC/DC song, and I was thinking to myself, maybe these people are right. And I was looking in a Penny Saver, and there was Alcoholics Anonymous, and it had an address and a phone number. And I said, you know what? I was in a drunken stupor with one of my buddies, and he says, "I'll bet you $50 you can't stay sober for 30 days. No alcohol whatsoever." And I said, "Oh, I can do that." He says, "All right, well, you try to do it." And so I saw the Alcoholics Anonymous thing in the Penny Saver, and I thought, you know what, I'll give him a call. And so I gave him a call, and I went to the meeting, and I bought a book. I don't know how much your book cost, but my book cost me $2.10. It wasn't cool to get sober in the 80s. And there wasn't like a lot of people that were in Alcoholics Anonymous, but for some reason, there were all these good old-timers that were in the meetings. And this one guy that I met, his name was Phil Stone. He had about 30 years of sobriety at that time. And he read the doctor's opinion out of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous for me. And he says, "You have a disease, Rod. You have a disease, Rod. It's spiritual, it's mental, and it's physical." He says, "We're going to take care of those things one at a time. And we're going to get you back on the path." Now, I thought that God didn't exist, or at least I put up a wall against God because I was very angry with God when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. My parents were killed when I was 12 years old. They were killed by a drunk driver that went through an intersection and killed them both while they were heading home. They were going to feed us dinner that night, and so we're all waiting there. I have a family of eight, six sisters and a brother, and myself. And so I thought to myself, you know what? if that's what you want me to be, if that's the love that you're going to show me, I'm going to show you how bad I can actually get. Now, I knew that I couldn't commit suicide, because if I committed suicide, at least the Southern Baptist church that I was going to said, you'll surely go to hell. If you commit suicide and take your own life, you'll surely go to hell. And so I thought to myself, if I accidentally overdosed, or if I choked on my vomit, that really wouldn't be suicide. It was an accident. So that was my motive, was to have one of these tragic things happen to me, and then I could reunite with my parents. The only problem with that is that I woke up over and over and over again to that same nightmare. And it got worse every time I woke up, or came to, whichever way you want to describe it. I couldn't kill myself. I can kill myself successfully. So I thought to myself, well, I had to stay sober. I remember I told you I made this bet with this guy, and I had stayed sober from alcohol for 45 days, which proved that I wasn't an alcoholic. And so to celebrate, I had a drink. One of the worst things that an alcoholic could do, I took a drink. And that one drink lasted a year and a half. And so on August 28th, 1987, I remembered that little Penny Saver ad, and I called that same phone number. And I said, when's your meeting tonight? And they said, 8:30. It's a beginner's participation. You might like that meeting. That's a pretty good meeting. There's a lot of people there. And there was probably about 300 people at this particular meeting that I went to. And I met Phil once again a year and a half later. And he says, are you done? I said, I think so, but I'm not quite sure yet. He says, it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's going to get worse. And so once again, he read the doctor's opinion to me. And he told me that I had a disease. It's physical, mental, and spiritual. He says, we're going to take care of these things one at a time. Now, if you remember, a year and a half, he had told me the same exact thing. I was thinking to myself, where did they train these old timers at? In the book. In the book. These guys knew exactly what was going on. And Phil told me something that I never, ever forgot. He says, if you and I were going to Vietnam, and we were flying on a plane out to Vietnam, would you ask me, I wonder what it's like in that jungle? Or would you ask the people coming out of the jungle, what do I got to look out for? You better look out for trip wires. You better make sure that your feet are dry. If you're going to smoke a cigarette, I advise you to get down on the ground. I wouldn't be the third man on that match. These guys knew what was going on. He says, it's the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. You cannot ask somebody with 30 days, I wonder what it's like in Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to ask the old timers who have been struggling through this thing, what do I got to do? Well, you might want to get a sponsor. You might want to read the book. You might want to be starting to work these steps. You might want to go to quite a few meetings. And if, for some reason, they ask you to do an H&I panel, I would advise you to go on that H&I panel. I got a hold of one of these sponsors who didn't care about my feelings, and he said, I was about 6 months sober, and he said, I got a panel for you tonight. Do you want to go with us? And I said, sure. So we hopped into his car, and we drove to Tehachapi Penitentiary. And before you go into Tehachapi Penitentiary, they have a sign on the gate that says, no warning shots will be fired. And there was four police officers in a square, and we were right in the middle of it. And we walked through the yard, and we went to the AA meeting. He said, now listen to me, Rod. Pay attention. He said, listen, if for some reason some kid drives their tricycle out on the street and you hit him and you kill him, this is where you're going. And the smallest guy was huge. His name was Kid. And he was huge. And he goes, that's the smallest guy in here. Now, you got to remember, I was in really good shape when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was my hair was down to my waist. I had a dirty wife beater t-shirt on. I had holes in my jeans. I was a whopping 117 pounds soaking wet. And I'm 5'11". So you can imagine I was a skeleton with some skin on. And they go, are you new? And I said, yes, I'm new. I have no idea how to stay sober. And they said, good, because we're going to show you how to stay sober. I hooked up with Phil Stone, and he introduced me to a bunch of old-timers. And one of the people that he introduced me to was a guy named Scotty Trenner, who saved my life. And Scotty lives in Coldbrook, New York. He bought a 75-acre ranch up in upper state New York. He's doing very, very well. And he's still alive and he's still sober to this day. And I actually called him prior to me coming to the convention. He goes, wow, you're speaking at a convention? I go, you know what? I think I'm finally making it. And he goes, oh, you have a lot of those. Don't worry about that. You're going to be just fine. Just stick to the facts, which is the facts. You got to crack open that book. That's the bad news. You're going to have to crack open that book. The good news is by doing that with somebody who knows what they're doing, it might just help you save your own life. But you have to do it through H and I. Hey, can you lead this meeting? We need somebody to set up the chairs. My sponsor told me a long time ago, he says, I'm going to teach you how to walk on water, Rod. And I go, really? Oh, you're going to teach me how to walk on water? He goes, absolutely. He says, grab this mop. And we started mopping the hall, and he goes, now you can walk on water. Now you can walk on water, Rod. Now when anyone asks you, can you walk on water? Say, yes, I can. Just in an S pattern. That's only if you've been to jail, you'll know all about the S pattern. You know all about that S pattern. I'm very, very happy, and I'm very, very grateful that I'm here. I'm very grateful that that I've been able to spread the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to a lot of people who I sponsor. I sponsor a lot of people. But the fact of the matter is that my sponsor told me something a long time ago, and you'll notice that I'm talking about my sponsor quite a bit because I'm so darn proud of him. If you don't have a great sponsor, find yourself a great sponsor. Find one that will tell you the truth, and they won't care about hurting your feelings, and they're willing to put their friendship on the line just so they don't validate your BS that's coming out of your mouth. Because I don't know about you, but for me, I had a lot of that BS coming out of my mouth. And he told me, he says, you got to change, Rod. You got to change. Now, when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you, I thought you guys were a little bit stuffy because I was only 22 years old. I mean, I really wasn't that old, right? Now it's different now because I'm 50 years old. So I'm thinking to myself, well, they look pretty young to me. You know, so, but he told me a long, long time ago, he says, listen, if you really want to succeed in Alcoholics Anonymous, he says, there's a problem here, and I'm going to tell you what the problem is. He says, you got this young kid coming in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't think I was a kid because my parents were dead by the time I was 12. So I had been out on the streets for another 10 years out after that. So I thought to myself, I'm more mature than these people. I've gone through more stuff than most of these people ever went through. And he says, no. He says, you're going to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, listen, you're trying to bring this party animal into Alcoholics Anonymous to spice it up. To try to spice it up. He says, I got good news and I got bad news for you. Which one do you want to hear first? And I don't know about you, but I had a lot of bad news happening in my life. So I was thinking to myself, well, if it's okay with you, I'll take the good news. He goes, okay, fair enough. He says, the good news is you're going to stay sober no matter what happens in your life, regardless if your kids die, if she divorces you, you crash the Lexus, the band doesn't work out, whatever happens in your life, you can stay sober no matter what. He says, that's the good news. He says, the bad news is that you got to get rid of that guy that you're bringing in to Alcoholics Anonymous. He's got to go. And he says, I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee, and I hope that you make a decision by then. He came back to me, and he says, what's your decision? He didn't even give me any time. He just said, what's your decision? I said, I let the partier go. He goes, great, now let's get sober. He said, great, let's get sober. So I was moping. I know that there isn't any mopers in here, but I was moping one day. He goes, what's wrong with you? I go, oh, my friends are having this big party over on the other side of town, and you know, they're going to be having fun, and all my friends are there, and you know, I really don't relate to any of these people here. He goes, you want to go to the party? I go, absolutely, absolutely. Finally, he's going to do something that I want to do. That I want to do. He's going to do it. I said, absolutely, let's go to the party. And so we went over to the party. And of course, it was the same crazy rock and roll parties that are always going on. And all my friends were there. And they were offering me this and offering me that and offering me this and that. And I told them, I said, remember, I told you that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not drinking anymore. And it was like the plague. They went right away from me. I went, what the? So I'm standing in the middle of this party and nobody's around me. And my sponsor's going like this at the front door. And I walked over to him and I said, what? He goes, that was your old life. Now let's go get sober. And it was that moment of clarity that I had that took me on the road of recovery. It took me on the road to recovery. I said, what do you want me to do? He says, well, first we got to change your insides. Now, listen to this. I want you guys to listen to this because there might be somebody out here in the crowd struggling. And I want you to know, my sponsor told me, he said, Rod, I'm going to give you the cleanup version of this. He says, Rod, if you were a jerk when you were drinking and you're not drinking anymore, you're still a jerk. He says, we got to get rid of that jerk. And I said, well, how are we going to do it? He says, we're going to start proceeding into the steps. Now, my sponsor was a third degree black belt. He was really good. Of course, I was a whopping 117 pounds. And he was doing all these kung fu moves on the bag. And we started reading step one. And he gave me a piece of paper. And I wrote the word powerless and unmanageable. And then I flipped over the paper. And I wrote hitting bottom and going to any lengths. And I wrote out step one. He says, listen, the fact of the matter that you're powerless and that your life is unmanageable, that's your problem. He says, the solution is that you've hit your bottom and you're willing to go to any lengths and sign your name at the very bottom of the page. And if you ever think that you're ever cured from alcoholism, please read that page again. And I still have that page with me. And so I wrote it and signed it. And step one was completed. And then so we started moving on. And one time he came to a meeting. He had a pen and a pencil in his hand. He says, write your sobriety date in pencil. Then, if you decide that you're going to take a drink, you can erase it real quick. Write a new date in there. And then erase it again. And then write a new date in there. He says, but if you decide that you want to stay here for the long haul, he says, write it in pen. In my book, it says, Hot Rod Sobered Up, August 28, 1987, period, in pen, and it never changed. It never changed. I never took another drink ever again. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. Like I said, I came in when I was 22. I'm 50 years old now, and my life has been incredible. You know, I was a veteran of the Sunset Strip. That's when Motley Crue was out, and Van Halen was out, and Rat and Warren and Poison, and all these bands were out, and I was trying to make my money. You know, I never made a dime while I was drinking. I just kept on losing drum sets. I would be bouncing on the freeway, and one drum would fall out and shatter all over the freeway, and I go, oh, well, I got another drum set. Same thing. Same over and over and over and over and over again. Same thing. I wasn't making any money. I'd make a $20 here, maybe a $10 there. And, you know, I was in horrible areas, playing horrible music, opening up for Guns N' Roses, you know, doing all these things to try to make things happen for me, and nothing ever happened. But when sobriety came, the floodgates opened wide open. And all these bands that I worshipped and that I thought of, and I thought, wow, that'd be really cool to play with that band. One band led to another band, led to another band, led to another band, and then I started making money. And I remember I was probably 10 years sober. I was probably 10 years sober. And we got an offer to buy a house, and I bought the house in cash. And somebody told me, they said, do you think you're successful in Alcoholics Anonymous? I said, can you buy a house in cash? I said, I can buy a house in cash. But that was only because I had surrendered to this program. You have to surrender to win. That's the only way that's going to happen. You got to surrender. You got to get rid of the ego. And my sponsor used to tell me, he says, you know, Rod, the longest distance you'll ever travel in your entire life is from your head to your heart. You'll never travel any further than that. And you cannot believe how many people, we're talking 12 inches, how many people die because they can't travel 12 inches. They cannot get here. They're always thinking with this, oh, I'm going to analyze it, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. He says, you can't analyze it. When somebody asks you to do something, just do it. Now, Pete asked me to come out here, and I was just going to speak. And it just so happens that we started talking about music, and he goes, oh, you got a band together. And then so it just kind of developed from there, and I got a hold of Victoria and got a hold of Sarah. And here it is. I'm going to do double duty tonight. I'm going to not only be your speaker, but I'm going to be your entertainment too. So I hope that you guys come to the dance. You're going to have a great time. I guarantee that. You're all seasoned players. These guys are great. And but I never made any money. I never made any money until I came in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then all of a sudden, I was recording this album. And all of a sudden, I was recording this album. And, you know, playing on that song and playing on this song and starting to meet really, really, really good musicians, like light years away from me. And there was a couple jobs that happened where I thought to myself, man, there's so many better drummers than myself. But for some reason, I would get the gig and these other drummers would be scratching their head going, dude, I don't know what happened. But it's not only your ability to play, it's what you look like, it's what your attitude is like. They don't want to see anyone coming down off of anything. They don't want to see anybody recovering from anything. If you can't do the job, I'll find somebody else who will do the job. And that's how the music business is. If you can't do the job, I'll find somebody else to do it. Think about how many drummers are out there. Thousands of drummers that are playing each and every day doing the same exact thing that I was doing. But you have to have the whole package. You can't just be a great drummer. Can you imagine, well, you can say Ritchie Blackmore, and that kind of solves all problems there. But, you know, I never was a jerk when it came to people. because I realized that these were the people that were coming to see me. And I never took advantage of them. I never took advantage of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know a lot of people that did. And I know a lot of people that I went to their funerals too. You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. Not everybody's going to make it. Some of us will make it, but not everybody's going to make it. And that's a hard thing, because you get close to people. My sponsor used to tell me all the time, he said, don't learn their names, don't learn their family values, don't learn any of those things. If he goes down, we don't want to have to go after two of you. And I thought that was a cold and callous thing to say. But you know what? It saved a lot of lives. It did save a lot of lives. And for me personally, I never took victory for any of their successes. And I never took blame for any of their defeats. That was on them and their higher power. But, you know, my sponsor told me, he says, listen, Rod, just concentrate on yourself and everything will be okay. Don't worry about everybody else. Just worry about yourself. Just make sure that you're doing the best job that you can do. You know, whether it's speaking on a panel or leading a meeting or setting up chairs or whatever it is. So just make sure you're doing the best that you can do. And everything's going to be just fine. And I started digesting some of these chunks of truth about myself. And I started getting involved in the steps. And I started getting involved in H&I. And they were having this H&I meeting right down the street from this place that I'd gotten sober at. And my sponsor says, you should go get yourself a commitment. I said, that's Wednesday night, or that's Friday night, or that's Saturday night, I don't know. And he says, you should give yourself a commitment. And so I went over there reluctantly and said, what do you want me to do? And they said, well, we got this meeting over here, and they need some support, so maybe you can go and help these kids out. And then I started doing a bunch of H&I work, and then I had a friend of mine who got in a car accident, and her kid was badly burned, head to toe, really, really bad. And so what I did is I grabbed a bunch of musicians together, and we played, and the money that we made at that, which was quite a bit, we donated to their medical bills. And it isn't to prop my own ego out, but it's to show you that, once again, I wasn't thinking about myself. The book that I got says, I'll think less of myself and more of others. That's why I'm here. I live in Huntington Beach, you know, which is a long ways away from here. But what I did is that I just did the footwork and made it the Westlake Village. That's where, and we carpooled out here, and here I am, on time, and in a right sober mind, talking to you fine folks. And I told the people at the early bird meeting this morning in Huntington Beach, I said, I'm going to make sure, and I'm going to do it right now. I want you to know that the Hal Hall says, what up, Santa Maria? What up? Okay? So I just wanted to say that real quick. Their love is with you too. And they're doing a fine job out there too. And you guys are doing a fine job out here too. You guys have treated us really, really well. And we're looking forward to the barbecue. And we're going to have a good time this weekend. We're going to have a good time. And think about it, you know, reversing the clock many years ago, there wasn't a cure for alcoholism. You know, a lot of people went through the insanity, went through the gates of hell, try to find recovery, and they never found it. But my sponsor told me a long time ago, he was a big Bible thumper. He knew all about the Bible. And like I said, I was a Southern Baptist. He says, you know, Rod, Moses walked in the desert for 40 years. For 40 years, he wandered aimlessly in the desert, and he never saw the promised land. Neither did that tribe of Israelites. They never saw the promised land either. It was a generation after them that finally saw the promised land. He says, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And if you're meant to see the promised land, you're going to see it. And if you're not, you'll be one of the people who are making their way slowly to the promised land. And the promised land for me is a great divide. And when I think about that, I think, you know, one day things are going to be different. Think about it. In 50 years, most of us won't be here. I said most of us won't be here. Some of you are much younger than I am, and that's a good thing. They'll be carrying it on to the generation after we're already gone. But, you know, basically, within 50 years, most of us won't be here. So, my sponsor, I used to go up to my parents' grave, and he used to have me clean my mother and father's grave. And he says, you know, if you see a couple other ones that are dirty, maybe you can clean those too. And I've been doing that now for 28 years. He says, we were looking at my mother's and father's grave. He says, you know what the most important thing is on that grave? And I go, the birthday? He goes, oh. I said, the name? He says, nope. I said, the death date? He says, nope. He says, that little dash, 19 whatever to 19 whatever, he says, that little dash is going to prove whether you were a giver or a taker. That little tiny dash, he says, that's the most important thing on that gravesite. Are you going to be a giver or are you going to be a taker? Now, I don't know about you, but I know about myself. I was a taker all my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that I have to think of you before I think of myself. And so as I was digesting these chunks of truth about myself and going on these panels and becoming secretaries and being part of the, what do you call it, a steering committee, you know, doing all these things, my life was slowly changing. And people used to tell me, they go, Rod, you're changing. I go, no, I'm not. I'm the same person that I've always been. They go, nope, you're changing. You're tapping into the power. That little thing that was just a little spark has erupted into a big fire. He says, you're on fire with AA. And when it comes to being on fire with AA, you got to give it away. You got to give it away to keep it. And if you don't give it away, you're probably going to be pretty lonely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kept on saying, these things he just kept on repeating to me, repeating to me, repeating to me. And I was thinking to myself, you know what? He's right. He's right. I have to give it away to keep it. And part of giving it away is sometimes you're going to be doing things that you don't want to do. Oh, I'm in Huntington Beach. Oh, Santa Maria is kind of far. Maybe I can kind of flake out on him. And then I think about myself, what would God do? Would God say that? He'd say, no. He says, you know what? I'm going to show up no matter what. I don't care if there's 10 people in this room or 1,000 people in this room. If I could save just one of them, it's worth it to me. It's worth it to me. And that's all we got to do. We just got to speak to one person at a time. There might be a couple hundred people in this room, and there's one person in this room that's saying, you know what? Maybe that guy was right. Maybe he was. Maybe I'll pick his brain for a little while. I made a mistake, and I picked a guy's brain. His name was Hugh Douglas, and his sponsor was Bill Wilson himself. So we're talking Bill Wilson, to Hugh Douglas, to Rod Garcia. The chain made it all the way to me. And I thought I'd pick his brain. He says, I'll tell you what, why don't we have lunch together, and we'll talk about it. That guy chewed me up from one side down the other. He really, light years away from me. Light years away from me. But he did something that that I never believed would happen. He said, Jesus had 12 disciples. One of those disciples was Judas. He says, what step do you think is a Judas step? And I looked on the wall, and I was thinking, he says, I'm going to relieve you from your misery. It's the one that you think that you don't have to take. That'll be the one that sends you straight out the door. He says, you got to take them all, and they're all in order for a reason. 1, 2, 3, and so on and so forth. He says, don't let the Judas step run you out. And part of my Judas step wasn't so much the writing of the fourth step. It was the talking about it in the fifth step and asking God to remove these defects of character and my shortcomings and having to go out and make direct amends to the people who I've harmed. And I knew some of them were going to be easy, and I knew some of them were going to be hard. But I had to be willing to go to the next level. And by going to the next level, I was actually saved. So a lot of people say, Rod, I don't understand why you're getting it and I'm not getting it. And I go, listen, you just have to log into your mind. If you tap into the power, whatever that is, if you tap into the power, there's nothing that you two can't accomplish. There ain't nothing that you guys can accomplish. I was in Huntington Beach this morning. I'm in Santa Maria tonight. You know, there's nothing that we can't accomplish. But you got to be willing to get up and do things. My sponsor used to pull out a $20 bill every time he spoke. He'd hold up a $20 bill and he'd say, who wants this $20 bill? And somebody would run up and grab the $20 bill and he goes, and try to give it back. And he goes, oh no. He says, that money's yours. And he used to say, that's what I mean about Alcoholics Anonymous. You've got to get up and get it. Sobriety is here for you. But if you don't want to get it, if you want to just sit on your bottom and say, oh, I'm just going to wait till it comes to me. Once again, you're probably going to be pretty lonely in Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't be one of those lonely people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that my sponsor told me, he says, why be lonely, Rod? You've gone through the gates of insanity and close to death. Why would you want to be miserable in Alcoholics Anonymous? Why wouldn't you want to get all that you could get out of Alcoholics Anonymous? Positive stuff instead of negative stuff. Why would you want that? Why would you want to sit in a room with a couple hundred people and die over and over and over again? He says, we did enough dying when we were out there. It's time to start living. And part of starting to live is starting to be a part of this program, of being of service in any way that you can. And I don't know about you guys, but I know for myself, the more I give, the more I get. The more I give, the more I get. I'm going to say it one more time. The more I give, the more I get. It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And sometimes I'm blown away, you know, with the things that are happening in my life. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't deserve these things. And then somebody tells me, you know, Rod, you've worked hard for them and you're making it happen and you're not taking the credit for it and you're just being of service. It's real, real, real simple stuff. But we, as alcoholics, complicate everything. We complicate everything. We say, oh, that couldn't happen to me. It can happen for you. These conventions, I was talking to Victoria, and I was talking to Sarah, and I was talking to Phil about it, too. These conventions are hard to put together. It's hard to say, okay, we got one goal, this is what we're going to try to do, we're going to make it happen, no matter what. And I can tell you, I text these guys over and over and over and over again. For the last couple months, we've been talking by text, and saying, you know what, that convention's going to be great. Whether there's 10 people here or 1,000 people here, that convention is going to be great. Because you know what? We're doing the footwork. Look at all the beautiful people that are here. Beautiful people. And people's lives are going to change here this weekend. There might be somebody who's very, very new. I would suggest that you get a sponsor. That's what I would suggest. I would suggest that you get a sponsor who knows all about the book, you know. Try not to get a long-distance sponsor. Try to get somebody who's in your hometown. Because it's easy to talk to somebody on the phone and tell them, yeah, you know what, I'm okay. Yeah, everything's cool. Blah, 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 blah. I said, it's harder when you're standing straight in front of them and their eyes are peering through your soul and you're going, I'm really not okay. Matter of fact, I'm having a hard time. Maybe we should go to a meeting together. Maybe you're right. Then you go to a meeting, you feel better. You say, oh man, I made it through another day. Phil told me this morning. He said, thank God we only got to make it through one day. Because some days are lousy. They're off the bottom of a loaded deck. You go, oh man. And Phil reminded me once again, thank God you only got to go through it for one day. Tomorrow's another day. Tomorrow will be a brand new day and you can start it off positive or you can start it off negative. The choice is yours. That's the great thing that our higher powers have given us, free will. You can have a lousy day or you can have a good day. But my sponsor told me something and I never ever forgot it. He says, you can be wrong as long as you choose, Rob. I'm going to say it again. You can be wrong as long as you choose, Rod. But when you're ready, we have a solution. And it's in this book. That's where the answers are going to come from. But you got to crack open the book to get the prize. My book that I was telling you about, that I bought for $2.10, is being held by a rubber band. The covers fell off of it. And it's highlighted, and there's words all scribbled on the sides, and there's sentences that are underlined. It's a used book. When you look at my book, you go, wow, now that's a guy that used the book. That wasn't somebody who used it as a coffee coaster or a beer and wine coaster or Jack Daniels coaster or any of those things. That's somebody who really, really dug into it. And you know, I used to see that with my parents' Bible. They used to have a big Bible, and that thing had writing in it, underlines, all kinds of stuff. That was a used, worn-out Bible, which I still have to this day. Matter of fact, it was that Bible that saved my life. And I started realizing there was even more than just Alcoholics Anonymous, that there was even something even bigger than that. And thank God that I was able to secure my faith and make amends to the bad, harmful things that I said to my higher power when I was angry when my parents were killed. Now, I've told you that my parents were killed by a drunk driver. Fast forward the clock a little bit further, and I was the drunk driver. I was the one that had the window rolled down, the Jack Daniels beating my legs, smoking a cigarette, radio up. You only got a couple more blocks to go, Rod. You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And then I would go out in the morning and I would make sure that there were no dents on the car, no blood, no teeth, no nothing. And I wouldn't know if I hit a dog or if I hit a kid. I became the drunk driver. The same people that killed my parents, that's what I became. My best thinking, that was my best thinking. And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, you got to change those things. You got to get involved in H&I. H&I is the way to go. I go, I don't even know how to say sober myself. They go, you will. You'll find out that thinking more of other people instead of yourself is really what it's all about. That's what they try to teach us here. You need to tap into a power that's going to solve your problem. What problem? I don't have a problem. Alcoholism, Rod. Alcoholism. Keep it simple, stupid. They used to tell me that all the time. Keep it simple, stupid. They said, listen, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous for a reason. It's not called Depression Anonymous, Pills Anonymous, Marijuana Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous. Very specific. He says, now listen. If you want to get rid of that booze that's inside of you, because I was about 90 days sober and I kept on smelling booze, and I told you I was a hard alcohol drinker, and I go, my clothes stink like booze. He goes, it's okay, Rod, just relax. It's just coming out of your pores. You're going to be okay in a little bit. And he was right. It eventually stopped. But the booze kept on coming out of my pores. And I didn't know what to do. I started getting scared. I was thinking to myself, maybe I'm going to be like one of those people that I've been attending their funerals. And they said, you won't if you just concentrate on yourself. Just concentrate on yourself. You're going to be okay. Don't worry about them. If somebody wants to do something bad in Alcoholics Anonymous, let them do something bad. He says, but you don't have to be a part of it. He says, all you got to do is worry about yourself, and everything's going to be just fine. He was so calm. He was different than I was. I was real high strung, and he was very, very calm, very, very mellow. And if it wasn't for him, a lot of the radio stations in Los Angeles wouldn't even exist to this day. He owns all of them, you know. And that's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got a lot of great talent here. We've got lawyers in here. Got people who are great on computers. We got people who could take apart a car and put it back together again. We got musicians here. We got everybody that you can think of here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsor used to say, you got to tap into it. If you need some advice here or advice there or advice here, he says, you can tap into it. We got some of the greatest people in Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, but if you cover your eyes and put the horse blinders on, you'll never get to see any of it. You'll never get to see any of it. You want to do whatever you can to make things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. How much time do I have? What time is it now? See, I don't even pay attention to time. Okay. I'm doing okay then. Okay. I can talk for 5 hours if you want me to. I'm okay. Anyhow, I just know for myself. Okay. I just know for myself. My sponsor told me, he said, hey Rod, have you ever thought about if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it? He said, did you ever think of what it is? And I go, He said, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. He says, that's what it's about. He says, you're going to think more of other people than yourself. You don't want to think about yourself. He says, it's very, very easy to get in a miserable, negative space. And you don't want to be that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to be a part of the solution. And a part of the solution is saying, okay, what would you like me to do? Tonight they said, can you speak up here? And can you perform up here? And I go, absolutely, 100%. And I left Huntington Beach this morning. And I thought to myself, you know what, God, we're going to have a great day. We're going to have a great day because I should have been dead long ago. I shouldn't even be here. But here I am once again. And you know what? I'm meeting new friends each and every day. Each and every day. I only knew three people coming up here. My bass player reminded me of it tonight. He said, all you got to do is raise your hand and say, my name's Hot Rod and I'm an alcoholic. And he says, you got thousands of friends. All you got to do is say that. And I remember when I told you I stayed sober for the 45 days and decided to celebrate. And so I celebrated, and a year and a half later, I raised my hand straight up in the air when they asked for newcomers, and I held my head low because I was ashamed, humiliated, and defeated. Ashamed, humiliated, and defeated. All three of those things when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, I don't think that I even deserve to be here. He says, yeah, you deserve to be here. You're an alcoholic. You have a disease. It's spiritual. It's mental. physical. How many times have I said that tonight? Quite a few times. He embedded it in my head over and over and over again. You're spiritual, mental, and physically in trouble. I didn't realize that. He said, listen, you got to tap into the power. He says, it might take you 1 year, it might take you 5 years, it might take you 10 years. But you can be as miserable as you want, as long as you want. He says, or you can just go with the flow. Now, I don't know about you. Miserable, restless, discontent, happy, joyous, and free. That's a decision for an alcoholic. I don't know which way I'm going to go. He says, you can be happy, joyous, and free, Rod. But you're going to have to digest some chunks of truth out of yourself. And as you get rid of the bad stuff in your life, good stuff will come into your life. You'll be able to look at a woman without looking at her as a sexual delight. You'll be able to give all that you can at a job instead of saying, I'm going to see how I can cut corners and still get paid the same amount of money. He says that you'll learn how to not cheat on your taxes. He says that you'll find how to be truthful and faithful to your lady and not talk bad about them. He says it'll be a lot of things. And slowly but surely you'll grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told you, I thought that I was already grown up when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I realized when I was getting sober that I knew nothing about how to be a good person. I always cheated on you. I always kept you at arm's length. I always thought, oh, you're going to leave me anyhow, so I might as well get all I can out of you, and then I'll be on my way. And Alcoholics Anonymous kind of teaches you how to do things differently, how to pass it on. You know, I've been looking at that sign most of the thing, but, you know, thinking about that pass it on, you know, That sometimes can be tough. And sometimes you might think, you know what, I don't feel like passing it on. And I just have to remember what my sponsor says. He says, listen, Rod, you're going to think less of yourself and more of others. He kept on embedding these things over and over and over into my brain until they started becoming a part of me. And I started realizing, yeah, you know what, I'm going to do that. If it works for you, it's got to work for me. If it's working for you, it's got to work for me. We're no different than one another. In many senses, we've all gone through the bucket. I was going to put something in front of it, but I'll keep it clean. We've all been through the bucket. And, you know, they tell me, they said, just keep on doing the things that you're doing and positive results will happen to you. I got this connection with God that really brought me to a different level. And I'll give you a story real quick. I was at step nine. And this guy really liked, I was sharing at a meeting, and this guy really liked what I had to share, and he came up to me and he was really excited, and you know, he was, you know, 30s or 40s, whatever he was in, and he came up to me and he said, man, I really like what you had to share. He says, dude, I really need a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor? And I go, hold on real quick. Let me talk to my sponsor real quick. And so I went over to my sponsor real quick and I said, hey, you won't believe it. This guy asked me if I could be his sponsor. He goes, oh, he goes, what step are you on? I go, you know, I'm on step nine. He goes, huh? He says, what does step 10 say? Or what does step 12 say? I said, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, he says, hold it right there. He says, that means that the 11 before it have to be done. You have to be well into the 12th step before you can pass on something that you don't have yet. He says, go back there and tell him that you'll be his friend But you can't be a sponsor because you haven't worked all 12 steps yet in Alcoholics Anonymous. He shrunk me down to about an inch. And I went back over to the sponsor and go, dude, I can't be your sponsor. He goes, why can't you be my sponsor? And I go, well, I haven't been through all 12 steps yet. He goes, that's okay. He says, I'll wait. And I go, which I commended him for that. I said, holy cow. And so my sponsor got me so resentful that I really wanted to work those final steps. And he says, 10, 11, and 12 you'll be doing for the rest of your life. Trust God, clean house, and work with others. Be doing it for the rest of your life. Steps 1 through 9 is dealing with your past. And so when I finally got to that point of step 12, he says, now you can go back and tell them that you can sponsor them. I can't believe it, but the guy stayed so dry and sober, but he stayed sober regardless. And he waited. And I said, I can do it now if you still need a sponsor. He goes, absolutely. Absolutely. I go, all right, great. Well, let's get busy. And I started passing it on. Once again, he was the first one that I sponsored. And now, many hundreds later, you know, I'm still sponsoring people. I'm still talking to my sponsor. I'm still reading the book. I'm still going on YouTube and you know, listen to another pitch. You know, still doing H&I work. I'm still speaking at conventions. I'm still speaking at roundups. I'm still speaking at anywhere where they say, you know what? We need a speaker tonight. You want to speak? And I said, absolutely, 100%. I'll be there. And it's not because I have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I'd like to say that I have all the answers, but I don't have all the answers. But I can tell you one thing. My sponsor told me, he says, listen, if you're going to speak somewhere, try to look presentable, because you might be the only example that somebody ever sees of a recovered ED alcoholic. Says you might be the only example that they ever see. And I never ever forgot that. I never forgot that. He was far ahead of me in the spiritual sense, which gave me the opportunity to tap into that power and say, you know what, can I use your higher power until I find one of my own? He says, absolutely. He says, my higher power is big. You can tap into him anytime you want to. And I actually tapped into the power through him. But he says, in the beginning, you lean on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then you lean on to the fellowship. Then you lean on your sponsor. But he says, if you want to be here for the long haul and be comfortable and serene, you'll start leaning on your higher power. He says, when you start leaning on your higher power, he says, that's when the change happens. I didn't even realize it. Stevie Nicks said it one time. I never, ever forgot it. She says, when the rain washes over you, then you'll know. Then you'll know that you're there. It takes a long time to get to that place. But thank God, like my good buddy Pete says, thank God we only got to do it one day at a time. One day at a time. I can make it through today. There's no doubt in my mind. And when I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to start over again. And the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. I've been very, very lucky. Like I said, I live out in Huntington Beach. I got 3 kids. My daughter's 22. My son's 18. And my other one is 17. Never have they ever seen me drunk. Not one time. They've never seen me slur or walk in a crooked line, or be messed up on anything. By the way, my wife has never seen me drunk either. And I've been with her now for 14 years. We live in Huntington Beach. We live only a couple blocks away from the ocean. And my sponsor told me, he called me from New York, and he says, you're right, Rod. Probably nothing ever good's going to ever happen for you. And I started laughing, and he goes, you know what? He goes, enjoy it. He goes, enjoy it. That's what life's about. He says, enjoy it. He says, it ain't going to be here forever. So you might as well enjoy it while you're there. And I sit and have breakfast right next to the ocean and listen to the waves roll in. And I was thinking to myself, I never thought that that would happen. Here we are buying another place now. And I'm thinking to myself, and now I got two places. And I'm thinking to myself, what I'm trying to do is I'm not trying to boast. I'm just trying to say that good things can happen for you too. But it takes a lot of work. You can't just sit around and hope that, you know, maybe it might happen for me. You got to do the footwork to make it happen. And when you do the footwork and you make it happen, all of a sudden the whole world unfolds in front of you. I've played in front of hundreds of thousands of people all my life. And ever since I was 22, sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I played in front of tens of thousands of people over and over and over again. Big stadiums, 90,000 people, you know, bullfighting rings of 40,000 people, you know. I'm very, very lucky. And I think to myself, you know, why me and not them? Maybe you were willing to go the extra length to make it happen. And the extra length is to be able to say, no matter what happens today, I'm going to make it to Santa Maria. I'm going to meet Victoria. I'm going to meet Pete Phillips. I'm going to meet Sarah. And anyone else that I meet beyond that is just icing on the cake. They're the main cake that I've been talking with. But there's so much icing here. It's incredible. And I'm going to meet everybody. And I'm going to shake hands. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make this a great weekend. Not only for myself, but for you too. And if you guys got some kind of rhythm method in you, you might want to go to the dance tonight. You'll guarantee you're going to have a good time. But I just want to say this one last thing before I close. I want to emphasize what my sponsor told me. Christ had 12 disciples. One of those disciples was Judas. One of the steps can be Judas too. Don't let the Judas step run you out the door. It's the one that you think that you don't have to take, that'll be the one that sends you out the door. Don't be one of those people that go out the door because you're not willing to digest a small chunk of truth about yourself. God bless you guys, and thank you for having me tonight, and keep coming back. Thank you.
Like to lead us out of the prayer ritual.